From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your call, some topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about the argument against the annual physical.
Oh, yeah.
Should you have one or not?
That argument is building once again.
You bet. And it's been building on and off for years. We'll discuss new data. And the FDA says you've got to put calorie counts on menus. Are they doing anything? Does it change behavior? Is it worthwhile? Or should we just forget about how many calories that Big Mac and fries plus a Coke are?
And we have a calorie count on our recipe coming up.
Yes, we do. Zucchini cornbread. It's not just for summer anymore. Have it even when it's chilly, although you won't be able to grow any zucchini in your garden when it's cold.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, we welcome our first caller, a listener in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hi.
Hello, how's it going?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, I've been on a quest for the past 3 years to get in better shape, and I've lost plenty of weight, but I've had such a hard time gaining muscle. And I was just curious, is it possible that some people just can't gain muscle? I've lost plenty of weight. I've lost almost 50, 60, at one point up to 70 pounds.
Okay.
And then I've done everything I can to gain muscle and you know, looking on YouTube and doing all the workouts and eating everything right and this and that. But I've just had a really hard time gaining any kind of muscle.
Congratulations on the weight loss.
Yes.
What did
yes.
you do?
Well, I just started eating really, really healthy and getting back to basics and, you know, eat right and work out a lot. And it worked really well until a certain point, and then I just sort of stopped losing weight, and so I was trying to gain muscle, and it's been an uphill battle ever since.
What kind of workout do you do?
I was doing a lot of kettlebell stuff and a lot of body weight workouts, and then I went into dumbbells and was doing training of dumbbells about 12 reps. You know, just the basic deadlifts and rows and curls and presses and things like that.
Oh, so you've been doing quite a lot of stuff to get that body in shape. To look at muscles, I'm going to look at two things. So first of all, have you been able to increase the weight that you lift since you started working out? In other words, from a point of view of how the muscles act, has that improved?
Yes, to a certain point, and then it seems like I reach a point to where I just can't seem to get any more, and then I recently just joined a gym and have been going with a barbell training, which I haven't been, and actually it has seemed to help a little bit.
Because mm-hmm. one of the ways we look at it, we have two ways when we look at, you know when we're working out. Number one, whether or not we can lift more weight, and then number two, how do we look? You know, and if you look at both those things together, many more people are concerned with how they look than how much
sure,
weight
sure.
they can actually lift.
You're looking
lift up.
At me when you say that.
There you go. There you go. No, I'm looking at me. I'm also looking at me. Now, some people are genetic celebrities, and that is they're born men. Are born, we're talking about guys now, with very little subcutaneous fat, doesn't exist. They naturally have six-pack abs. They don't don't eat too much. And they're the ones who are on the front of Men's Health and Men's Journal and the other magazines. And pretty much they don't have to do that much. They may have to work out a little bit, but they don't have much fat on the front of them. Other people just don't have a lot of fat because they don't eat very well. And I was in Nepal, and I was on a medical service trip. And we did saw a lot of guys, a lot of young guys and everything. And they all had six-pack abs because they were only eating 800 calories a day. And they were not necessarily healthy when they were 20 or 25 because they really needed more than 800 calories a day. And so that was the other issue is they had probably 5% body fat or 2% like my kids would have when they were in high school. So the issue is, what's your height, what's your weight? Let's look at that.
I am 6 foot tall, and I am currently at 107 78 pounds.
Yeah, so you're really at a good weight, and your diet, obviously, you've lost a ton of weight, which is, you know, congratulations. You know, accenting protein-rich foods are always important. Protein supplements can be okay. They're made of soy if they're at a, from a verified place like, you know, Costco or Walgreens or CVS or, something like that, Walmart. In other words, make sure that they're, you know, make sure they're certified. And then, you know, following a trainer and what a trainer says, which is more reps with a lighter weight or fewer reps with a heavier weight. I'm not an expert on that at all. Mm-hmm. And then there's only so far you're going to get. You know, how old are you this year?
I'm 31.
So you're 31. At 31, you're going to get a lot more than you are, for instance, at 51 or 61. And the reason is, as we get older, we lose, after the age of about 20 or 21, we lose about 1% of our muscle mass every single year. So you actually don't have the same potential that you had at 21 now that you're 31, but you can activate and overcome that potential by essentially doing the right training. And I think joining a gym is great. As I said, joining a gym, high protein foods, that's really where it's at. And if you want more definition, you may actually have to even trim down a little bit more, but I think I would go more for the reps than trimming down, because I think 178 at 6 feet is just about perfect from a BMI point of view.
Well, thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot for the call at 800-462-7413. And a listener now in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have a question about how to protect my knees when I'm downhill skiing. I'm 56 years old. I have one knee that's a little weak. I had a surgery on it about 10 years ago for a torn meniscus and a cyst. The knee has recovered, but I have to try to take care of it. And about 3 years ago, I was downhill skiing, and I took a very minor fall. And as I was falling, I felt this tweak in my knee. And I was able to ski down the mountain that time, but the next day my knee swelled up really badly. And it took about 6 weeks to recover, and I went to a doctor for it, and he said I had a micro tear in the knee and just prescribed anti-inflammatories, and eventually it healed. But since then, I've gotten worried about skiing because I love downhill skiing, but I'm just afraid that I'm going to damage my knees as I'm getting older.
My question is,
is there some kind of brace or anything I could wear while I'm skiing that would help protect my knee?
Well, first of all, the most important thing to protect the knee are the muscles around the knee. So you want to do, they're called quad sets. We'll put that on our website, zorbapastor.org. We'll put a connector to YouTube to show you an example of quad sets, because quad sets are really a great way of building up the quad muscles. And those are the pretty much, I would say, almost the most important muscles in the knee. And there are a number of knee exercises that you can do to actually build up your strength. You can also go to a physical therapist for one visit or go to a local trainer for one visit, and they can give you exercises. That's number one, number two, and number three in terms of importance. The next thing you want to do is, if you're going to wear a brace, there's not really a brace that protects your knee, but sometimes when people pull up those elastic sleeves that you can buy pretty much anywhere, sporting goods stores, you know, drugstores, they will give a little bit of pressure on the knee, and sometimes for some people that makes a big difference. The very rigid knee braces that are often post-op are really not good for someone such as yourself. And like you said, you had an injury, you had a micro tear, or you had a meniscus injury to your knee. And the problem with knees is we only have a 40-year warranty on our knee. And when that warranty runs up, you know, life sort of goes on. So you love downhill skiing. I'm a downhill skier too. I love it.
I know, that's partly why I called you, because I've heard you talk about skiing before, and my husband has said that after I injured my knee last time, he thinks I should give up skiing because he thinks I'm just getting too old.
Wait a second. I don't think you're too old at 56, not at all. Now, does he ski, your husband?
He does, but he's more worried about causing permanent damage to his knees just by continuing to do some of these sports that we do as we're getting older. And we both like downhill skiing. We like cross-country skiing, too, which is easier on the knees. So he thinks I should give up downhill and just focus on cross country. But I still like doing the downhill skiing once in a while.
Yeah, I heartily disagree. I don't think you have to give up cross country or downhill skiing.
Well, that's good. That's really what I wanted to hear when I called you today. That's good to hear.
Glad we could fit the bill.
Great. Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. At 800-462-7413.
Here it is. I solved a husband and wife problem, and Tom, you didn't even give me the gavel.
This isn't a Judge Zorba. Let's get to a topic, Zorba. An oncologist at the University of Pennsylvania has joined a long chorus of people suggesting that the annual physical exam is not necessary.
Right. And he's right. The annual physical exam is not necessary. But there are things that are necessary that are worthwhile. And now that we have an electronic medical record to be able to prompt us to do things, we doctors have to be a little bit more, if you will, cognizant of what that is. And then we have to train our patients, because there are a lot of patients that come in once a year and they go, well, I'm here for my annual physical, with the idea that we'll detect things that aren't there. And there's some things we should do, but frankly, there's a lot of overtesting that goes on that costs billions of dollars. And I'll give you a perfect example. I had a gentleman in my office. The U.S. Public Health Task Force has said that PSA, prostate tests, are worthless. Okay,
right.
They said it's worthless because the death rates are no different. Yes, you are less likely to die of prostate cancer, but yes, you are more likely to die of other diseases as they go on. The crude death rates are no different. And I always get emails from urologists saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. But, mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about the U.S. Public Service Task Force. So I had a patient in my office the other day, and he said, I'd like a PSA test. And I said, well, if you get a PSA test and it's positive, we'll have to act on it. And he said, yeah, but if it's negative, then I can feel reassured. Well, it came back 6, which is not a big elevation, but a little elevation. So I sent him a note on my electronic medical record called Epic. I sent a note on something called MyChart and said, your PSA is elevated. You've got to go see the urologist. And he sent me a note back and he said, wait a minute, you said it was a worthless test. Why do I have to see a urologist? I said, well, because the standard of care is I'm going to write a consult and then you decide whether or not you're going to go. And a lot of this testing is exactly that. It puts you in a conundrum.
Well, what goes on with an annual physical, because it's been a bunch of years since I've had one.
The reality is what we should be doing instead of an annual physical is colonoscopy every 10 years, sooner if you need it, if you have a family history, mammograms, you know, for a certain age group, I won't go into the numbers, every 1 or 2 years, depending on that. You should have blood pressure checked on a regular basis. There's a number for that for every year. Cholesterol checked every 5 years until you're older, unless you have a problem. And there are about 5 or 10 different things, probably closer to 10. Weight, for instance, you don't need a physical, but if you don't have a medical problem, you need to have certain testing.
I get all that.
That's all you need.
But if I show up at the doc and say, I want my annual physical, what does the doc do?
Well, they listen to your heart, listen to your lungs, but if you don't have anything wrong with you, there's no reason to listen to your heart and lungs. Now, if you smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day, then that's kind of important. There are more things. But for a healthy person, the physical examination is so much less important than it was 30 years ago because we have tests that, frankly, are much better than we are at picking up the diseases that we can screen for, the cancers we can screen for effectively and reduce death rates are colon cancer and breast cancer. We don't have a screening test for lymphoma. We check lymph nodes, but there's no evidence that does anything. Uterine cancer, and of course, cervical cancer, of course. Yeah. I mean, those are the big three from a cancer point of view. So they are right. The annual physical is worthless. However, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have certain screening tests on a regular basis and have certain biometric things tested and checked, like height and weight, and maybe a discussion about weight.
Yeah, I'm on a cholesterol-lowering drug, and I need to be tested for that.
You need to be tested every year, but you don't need to have a physical from head to toe every year because there's no evidence the physical itself is worthwhile.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Oh, yes. Certainly have enjoyed your program the last 5 or 6 years since I retired. I'm 66, and just before Thanksgiving, I came down with a bout of community-acquired pneumonia, which I've never had before. Put me on what they call a Z-Pack, And off I went for a few weeks. But after about a month, I wasn't getting any better. So they moved me to something stronger, I take it, levofloxacin.
Mm-hmm. Levoquin.
And that really worked quite a bit better. I was surprised at how much more quickly I got better. They sent me home initially with some paperwork, you know, what to do. And I got to wondering, if I was still working, they didn't mention anything about, you know, contagion.
Mm-hmm.
How soon should I have gone back to work if I was still working? I wasn't, which was great because I could sleep as much as I wanted to. And then the other question that puzzled me was about 6 years ago, I had a shot for pneumonia, and then I had a booster last July. What happened there? Why did I still get it? Yeah. So those are my two questions.
Let's look at that. Let's look at the shots first of all. The pneumonia shot does not prevent all pneumonia. It just prevents certain common pneumonias for which we now give immunization because we've got them there. Certain types of pneumonia, of bacterial pneumonias, are mitigated by the shot, but it doesn't assure you against pneumonia. And pneumonia, by the way, is always in the top 10 leading causes of death almost in almost every age group. So chest infections of pneumonia are still a serious problem. Viral pneumonia, such as influenza, is a serious problem. So, you know, you get an immunization such as this year for influenza, and it's, you know, H3N1 is not, it turns out not to be very good. So the shot helps some pneumonias, doesn't hit others. Now, they put you on azithromycin, which is the right drug, and when that fails, we go to Levoquin. It's not that Levoquin is stronger, it's just different. And azithromycin is more likely to hit the bugs that cause your pneumonia than Levoquin. And what we do is we've developed protocols that if one doesn't work, we head off to the other. But Zithromax is actually the initial drug to start because it gets more pneumonias. It's a little bit broader spectrum than levofloxacin. So they did the right stuff. Now, contagiousness. You know, when are people contagious? That's a very good question. Pretty much a lot of the bacteria that are out there, even if you have pneumonia and I'm working with you, I'm not going to get pneumonia. I may get a cold or an earache or a sore throat. I mean, it's not terribly contagious. There's some forms of pneumonia. Certainly tubercular pneumonia is highly contagious, but most pneumonias are not. And once your fever goes down within 24 to 48 hours, you are not, you know, you're really not contagious to speak of, if you would. So they didn't give you the advice because they didn't give you the advice. And I'm trying to remember what we ultimately tell people are contagious. We say stay at home until you feel better. That's kind of what we do. You know, it's that way. Now, influenza, interestingly, is different because during an epidemic such as the epidemic of 2015, we tell people to stay at home until they're fever-free and they feel better for 2 to 3 days. And that's different because influenza is highly contagious. I mean, it's super contagious compared to a bacterial pneumonia. So does that give you some food for thought?
Yes. Thanks for your help.
Well, thank you so much for your call.
800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, once again, it's time for your favorite segment, mostly because it now has its own theme song, The Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's The Grammar Police.
You know, every time I hear the song, I think about the song, and I'm trying to picture the band, and then I'm picturing the band filled with a bunch of grammarians, and they would just be dressed differently than a hip-hop gang.
They have cop uniforms on.
Yeah, they have cop. That's right. You got it. That's right. And if they're women, they've got little ruffles up here, you know, with no neck showing.
Today's shameful and unforgivable error was pointed out to us on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page by a listener named Ellen. Zorba, shame on you.
Oh, God,
the
shame.
The brown material left in the pan after browning is called fond, not frond. You have mixed up two very different things. Please tell the listeners so we know you can tell the difference between the two.
That's right. Sorry. You're exactly right. The fond, F-O-N-D, is the stuff on the pan when you're, for instance, sauteing beef. It has lots of flavor, lots of umami, which adds to fullness. Let's see what they say about that Try that, Mr. and Mrs. Grammar Policeman. Go ahead. But getting back to the
back
issue,
to frond.
A frond, they are correct, is a botanical term that has to do with a chlorophyll-filled leaf, although it's technically not a leaf, it's a frond. So, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Grammar Policeman, I know the difference, but I often get them mixed up with the words that come out of my mouth. So thank you so much for pointing that out.
And if you're not fond of something Zorba said, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
We have a recipe coming up. You'll like that if you like zucchini. Some of us won't like it, but we'll hang around anyway. After the recipe, some more of your calls. We have another topic to talk about, our medical myth buster, too. All right here on Zorba, Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call if you have a question for Zorba is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, zucchini cornbread for lunch.
That's right. Now, do you still have zucchini left in your freezer from this last summer?
Let's see. When's the last time I had zucchini?
That's right. You don't have zucchini. It's not
no.
on your.
It's been not on decades.
Your, it's not on
it's
your.
It's not still in
it's
the fridge.
Not on your bucket list, right?
You got it. Yeah.
So I mean, we think of zucchini as a summer crop, which it is. And then we get sick of zucchini. We get tired of zucchini, especially since I used to grow zucchini. I mean, you know, your fear is your neighbor leaving the zucchini.
That's zucchini they're talking. Yeah.
But this is zucchini cornbread. So if you've got some in your freezer, or you want to go to the store and get it, it's a nice way to have a summer vegetable in a fun manner.
Okay.
Even though it's not summer. It'll make you feel warm and toasty.
Okay. Okay.
So you start out with a half cup of unsalted butter.
Half a cup of unsalted butter.
Now, that may seem like a lot of butter, but you have to realize the fact that this zucchini cornbread will serve 10. It's 10 pieces.
Oh, okay.
So if you eat the whole zucchini bread loaf, it's a lot. But if not, then it's not a lot. Two large eggs, lightly beaten.
Two large eggs, lightly beaten.
One half cup of buttermilk.
Half a cup of buttermilk.
Now, do you know how buttermilk comes when it's in the refrigerator? It either comes in the quart container or it comes in a little pint container.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, my father used to drink buttermilk straight out of the carton. Have you ever tried to drink buttermilk straight out of the carton?
No.
Try it sometime. See what happens.
I don't like buttermilk.
Stand on the side of the refrigerator and drink the buttermilk out of the carton. Let's see what you think of it. So, one large zucchini.
A large zucchini.
A cup of all-purpose flour.
Cup of all-purpose flour.
Half a cup of whole wheat flour.
Half a cup of whole wheat flour.
Half a cup of sugar.
Half a cup of sugar.
Teaspoon of baking powder. Yeah. 3/4 of a teaspoon of sea salt, if you have it, but regular salt will work too.
3/4 little tea fine sea salt.
Half teaspoon of baking soda.
Half a little tea baking soda.
And 1/4 cup medium grind cornmeal.
1/4 cup medium grind cornmeal.
Okay, so preheat the oven to 350, then butter a 9x5x3-inch loaf pan, roughly the size. You're going to use the middle rack, so do that. Melt 1/2 cup of butter in a small saucepan over medium heat. Continue cooking until the butter solids at the bottom of the pan turn a golden brown. Very low heat. Takes about 3 minutes. Then scrape the butter into a medium bowl. Set it aside, let it cool, and then whisk in the eggs and buttermilk. So you've got to let it cool just a little bit. Then trim the zucchini ends and then thinly slice 5 1/8-inch rounds from one end of the zucchini, reserving a little bit for garnish. Coarsely grate the remaining zucchini, add it to the bowl and butter mixture, and stir it up so it'll all be mixed together. And then sift in the flour, sugar, baking powder, salt, and baking soda into a large bowl. And when I sift, I just put it through, I mean, I don't use a sifter because it takes too much time, so I just use a wire mesh strainer. Try saying that a few times. And then whisk in the cornmeal. Add the zucchini mixture, folded enough to bread, just to sort of blend. It's going to be very thick. Transfer the batter to the pan and smooth it out and bake it until golden brown. And that's going to be about 50 to 60 minutes roughly, or until the tester, when you insert in the middle of it, you've got one of those wire testers to make sure that
whatever that is, I'm sure I have it. Yeah.
Toothpicks. You have a toothpick in the house?
Yes.
Yeah. See, so you could use a toothpick when you make this done. And when you make this, let me know. I won't hold my breath. I promise, because I would die holding my breath. Let it cool in the pan for 10 minutes. Remove it from the pan. Let it cool on a wire rack, and it goes well with soup or chili. Perfect.
So how many
calories? Okay. So it's roughly 250 calories roughly per serving. This makes 10 servings, so you're only going to have a small piece. And the reason we get our calories from our butter, you know, so once again, it's a treat. And we have to learn to eat treats the right way. If we look at – I went out to a restaurant the other day and I ordered a dessert for the three of us, and there were enough calories in there. I mean, there were 1,000 calories in the dessert. I looked at it, and I'm pretty good at estimating calories. Yeah. So if I just ate the dessert, which was made of chocolate, I would have had an extra 1,000 calories.
Yeah.
There are 10 pieces in the zucchini bread. 10 means 10.
Okay. If I want this recipe
– yes. Come to our website at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can also find us through Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Mount Vernon, Illinois now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I so enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. How can we help?
A friend sent me a structured water filter. She got at a one of those health and wellness fairs. Mm-hmm. I have diabetes, and this thing claims to lower A1C if used religiously. Now, I checked out the website, but I think they're a little bit prejudiced as to the benefits of this. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if the doctor had heard of this. It's supposed to be a forever filter. You don't ever have to replace the parts. That's what kind of, I think, kind of maybe say,
Yeah, how much did it cost?
Around $400.
$400. Okay, so let's talk about that. First of all, if somebody has a website where they're obviously the website is to sell their item and to disparage known treatments for diabetes, such as taking a medication or exercise or so on, you immediately have to look askance at it. And $400 is a lot of money to pay for something.
I know, right?
And it's a lot of money to pay for something that is worthless. It's a tremendous amount of money that is absolutely worthless. You cannot treat diabetes by having filtered water. It doesn't work. You treat diabetes by losing weight, by exercising more, by eating right. Those are the initial treatments for diabetes. And then if they don't work, you add medications, or if you have type 1 diabetes, you take insulin. But water purification is bogus, and this is quackery. And this is a good example of, you know, all of a sudden somebody says, well, this person is a diabetic. I think I'll spend $400 to help them. There's something wrong in the water. What does water have to do with it? Diabetes are calories. We're eating too many calories, and we're not exercising enough, and we have a genetic predisposition. So this was a gift from someone?
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid so.
Yeah. Well, don't be afraid. You know, you accepted the gift.
No, I don't want to tell her that, you know, you just wasted money.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to tell her that. I mean, she gave you a gift.
Yeah.
When I give a gift to someone, I often don't say, how did you like it, most of the time. Now, if she asks you, how did you like it, you can say, well, it didn't do anything for my diabetes, or I'm doing other things, or it's part of it. There are a lot of ways that you can finesse your answer so that you don't insult the person who gave you the gift. But this is worthless. And it's people are being taken all the time, especially diabetics, because diabetes is so, you know, is so common. And if you go to the website and it doesn't smell right, it's not right. It's the tyranny of the web. The web has good information and it has junk. And it's the tyranny. So, you know, and also some of the people who say it helped me on the website, how do you know they're real? You know,
right,
I mean,
right.
I could write Phyllis says this worked for me, and I could be Phyllis. I could be Phyllis and Brenda and Marge and
right.
Jessica and mm-hmm. Jennifer, and it worked for me, and I lost a gazillion pounds. No, that's exactly it. The problem is people want to help others. Your friend wanted to help you with your diabetes, and for that, it's really nice that your friend loved you enough to buy this,
yeah.
thing. You know, and that part is nice.
I just wish they wouldn't try to help. Just back off and let me do it myself.
You've got it. But still, their heart is in the right place. Their heart is in the right
mm-hmm.
place.
So, okay.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener, is with us in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. My problem is that I can hear my heart rate pulse in my head. The sensation is constant. I've had this problem for 2 months. Hmm. I had an ultrasound done of the carotids, and the left carotid is narrowed. There isn't any treatment recommended at this time. Even though this sensation is constant throughout the day, it's more noticeable when it's quiet, because I don't have the daily activities going on.
How old are you?
68.
68. Okay, they checked your carotid arteries and they said there's some narrowing, but they didn't recommend anything. So, and we all have some narrowing. It's you know, if you're in your 60s and you've lived, chances are pretty likely you have some narrowing. Some narrowing can be very serious and some isn't. And so they didn't recommend any treatment, meaning that wasn't serious. But I don't really know if this is connected to the heart sensation that you have. Does your heart feel like it's going faster or slower? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh, no. You can just hear this swishing sound from, uh-huh. you know, your heart rate and your pulse.
Uh-huh. Is it when you lie down, do you hear it more when you lie on your left side at all?
No. It's uh-huh. constantly the same, uh-huh. whether it's, you know, throughout the day. But like I said, it's more noticeable when it's quiet because
yeah,
because uh-huh. it's, you know.
You're quiet.
Right.
That's
and you don't have the daily activities occupying your mind.
Yeah, no, you're quiet, and that's pretty common. So, first of all, one of the things you want to do when you have an unusual sensation of the heart is you want to see whether or not the heart is functioning properly. Physical examination helps because you listen to the heart to see whether or not there's a murmur. Many years ago, we'd say if there's a murmur, you might be something serious, but now we can check it out right away with an ultrasound of the heart called an echocardiogram, and that basically tells us whether or not something is significant or not. And I think if you've got an unusual sensation of the heart where you're feeling it, it's probably important for you to get an echocardiogram to see how the valves are working in your heart and maybe a Holter monitor to look at how the heart is actually, what the pulse is like, if you will. But the echocardiogram is where I would go next. Obviously, it's a bothersome sensation. Are you anxious about it? Does it make you anxious?
No, it's just that it's in the head, you know, the sensation.
Yeah.
I don't really feel it in the heart or anything like that.
So this is more in the head and in the neck,
right.
which is why they initially looked at the carotids. I think I
right.
would have an echocardiogram and I would find out what your heart is doing. I think that's what I would do. Because the sound may be going from the heart, may be actually originating from the heart, even though you're experiencing it in your head. So I think an echocardiogram would be something that would be useful for you to have.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let us know what happens.
Yeah, we appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, here's a question from a Spokane, Washington listener named Donna. She writes, Dr. Zorba, I saw your recent article concerning the elderly and loneliness, and I was so moved by it. The elderly are our history going away before our eyes. That generation is a special generation like no other. They have paid their dues to society and to life. They are pieces of our history. They are the storybook that makes us think about life. They are the foundation for who we are today and what we will bring to the future. I would like to get involved in the loneliness of an elderly person. I know I would be good at it. There has to be a way to reach as many as we can and to share the hearts we hold in our hands as we embrace these treasures amongst us. Can you give me pointers of where to go to do this?
Oh, sure. What a sweet letter.
What a beautiful
You know? One. What a beautiful
And I want to thank you so much for being so kind to my generation.
Yeah, that's right. You're part of the generation. Well, you want to thank her for being so kind.
Yes, that's what I'm doing.
There are a couple of things to do. First of all, going to your local senior center is a great place to start. Because at most senior centers, almost every senior center in the country, there's a social worker there. And they'll tell you about somebody who's lonely. That's a great place to start. Your church, your synagogue, your mosque, your temple, another great place to start. If you're a person of faith, it's a great great way to get involved because they know people. You know, there are people that are known in the congregation that basically are lonely. Another place is the VA. There are lots of vets around who are lonely and could use a helping hand. And they really did a lot for us by really preserving our freedom, defending our country. And so your local VA hospital or a VA institution can give you that. Those are ways that I would sort of think of starting with something
good idea.
And the interesting thing about this, if you affect one person, you affect the world. It's a Talmudic saying that if you change one person, you change the world. And it's really one person at a time. So it's not – you don't think of it as too much to do because you can help one person feel better.
Have a question for Zorba? Just send it along in an email to
– Zorba@WPR.org.
We have another topic to talk about that's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our medical Mythbuster 2 here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up after we talk for a bit on the new FDA rules for calorie counts on menus.
I think they're great. Mm-hmm. I think they're wonderful. There was tremendous pushback from the restaurant industry and from supermarkets because supermarkets will have to have them on certain things. They won't have to have them on deli meats. They won't have to have them, for instance, on a tuna salad or macaroni salad. They will have to have them on prepared sandwiches because the restaurant chains, more than 20, you don't have to have it in a restaurant if there are fewer than 20 restaurants attached to the chain. So
okay.
In other words, small restaurants will not have to have it. And that's okay. That's a nod because it takes work to put them on. They're great. A tub of popcorn in a movie theater will have to tell how many calories it has. You know how many calories are in the biggest tub at the movie theater I go to?
I can't even imagine.
With butter?
2,000?
And it's between 1,400 and 2,000 calories. I mean, those are the calories for the entire day.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't include the 64-ounce Slurpee that you get with it. And I think people should be able to buy what you want to. I'm against the New York idea that you shouldn't be able to buy 64-ounce
drinks. But you should
drinks.
Know what you're buying.
I think so. It makes a difference to me. I'll tell you something. I was in the Detroit airport. I was hungry. I had a Big Mac attack, and I do occasionally have them. I walked over to McDonald's. A Big Mac and the large fries were 1,200 calories. Yeah. I looked at that, and I thought, I don't need 1,200 calories, and I walked away. And frankly, if it was on the screen looking at the 1,200 calories, then I looked at all the other sandwiches. There was nothing below 500 calories. I didn't eat anything.
Yeah.
Will that make a difference? Studies have shown it makes a difference to 10 to 20% of the people. Well, that's a lot, 10 to 20%. So they're going to have to list all the calories that are on there and then in a conspicuous way, in other words, not an 8-point font type, which you cannot read. And I think this is going to make a big difference. I think it'll be helpful. Educate people and then they can make the right choice.
The fast food people are afraid of losing business, obviously, which they did with you.
Well, they're afraid of losing. Right. I didn't order that. But, you know, what's going to happen is that over a period of time, we are going to see healthier and healthier food. You know, Subway sort of led the way because, it, you know, they led the way with what they were doing. But we're going to see healthier food at a lot of restaurants because people are going to look at it and say, do I really want to spend 1,200 calories on this lunch? I want to have something else. So I expect that the restaurant industry, as they are going to jump to consumer demand because consumers want to eat fewer calories and they want to have less salt in their diet because they want to be healthier.
Some of them have salads now, some of the fast food.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a burger or a salad. It can be a healthier burger and you can have a healthier sandwich. And that's really very important. So I think I applaud the FDA for finally taking these rules and bringing them for us so that we consumers can make better choices.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I was calling to find out if cold sores can be sexist. I have had cold sores since I was very young. I think I got them when I was 3 years old from my mom. My mom got them from her mom. But the thing is that none of my brothers, I've got four brothers, they don't have them. My dad doesn't get them. My mom's brothers never got them. Why is that? It doesn't seem fair.
It is not fair. You are exactly correct. So you've got four brothers. You were the only girl in the family, huh?
Only girl and the youngest.
And the youngest. Oh, so man. how was that going
That's
for
a tough
you?
Life.
That is tough.
Well, they taught me how to be tough.
They
I'll
taught
that,
you.
Yeah.
They taught you how to be tough. You had to rise to the occasion. The answer is they are infection. Herpes, cold sores, which are the most common cold sores, and even other ones called aphthous ulcers, viral. But herpes, cold sores, a virus, are infectious. Some people develop antibodies right away, and so the cold sore never manifests. It may manifest as a little sore in their mouth one time, and then they have antibodies to it and keep the sores from occurring.
Yeah, but she's asking about sexes. Her dad and her brothers never get them, and she does. She's a woman. They're men.
Yes, she's a woman.
Do they have antibodies and I don't?
No, they have. So first of all, there's not a male-female relationship to cold sores. Some men get them, some women get. Women do not get cold sores. Yeah, the women get cold sores because they're the weaker of the sexes.
Well, Zorba, do you get cold sores?
No, I don't get cold sores.
I don't get
But my wife
sores.
Gets cold
that
sores.
That proves her
That's
point.
That's it. That's it. But if I told my wife she was the weaker of the sexes, I would suffer definitely from that particular statement. But some people develop antibodies. So the men in your family, I don't know why, have developed it. It may be coincidental, like some people have four boys and one girl, and some people have four girls and one boy. Mm-hmm. And the answer is chances involved with that. And, you know, some people say, well, we only get men in our family. I'm the first girl in three generations. Once again, we know that's chance. We know that there isn't a predisposition, even though we humans think, oh, no, it's not chance. This is not coincidence. Studies have shown that it is. So it's really the same. And why you don't have good antibodies to keep these cold sores away, I don't have the foggiest idea. So I don't have it. I'm sorry.
They don't sell them at the store, do they?
No, they don't. They don't sell antibiotics. So what do you take for your cold sores? Do you take Valtrex or Acyclovir, one of the other excellent remedies?
You know, I tried it, and it wasn't super helpful for me. Uh-huh. I found that prevention is the best for me. Mm-hmm. I get them when my lips get too dry.
Okay, good. Good.
I just every night I put on lots of it's a local beeswax lotion.
Ooh, super.
And that seems to be the best way to keep them away.
And that's often it. Irritation will do it. So when people often go skiing, they'll be in the sun or they go to the beach. That will do it. Chemical or physical or solar radiation can often bring them on. So you're doing the right thing. Prevention is really the name of the game. So, and it's not fair that you're the only girl and you're getting the cold sores in the family.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Just another thing to tease me about. Oh, well. Well, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time again now for our medical MythBuster. Today's question comes to us from a loyal listener, Mike. He writes, "Hello, Tom and Zorba. I'm approaching 70, and there isn't much hair atop my head, but plenty of it has sprouted from my nostrils. It's unsightly if I don't trim it every second or third day. That regimen is certainly inconvenient, but worse, it seems to irritate the tender skin inside my nose. in the Sharper Image catalog, I noticed a product called a fine facial hair remover that was offered for $79.99. It's an electrolysis device, and I'm wondering if it would be effective and safe to use on the impressively hirsute entrance to my nasal passages.
Gosh, hirsute. Well, first of all, I wouldn't use it in your nose. I wouldn't use anything that's electrolysis in the nose because the nose has mucous membranes. So I would stay away from that.
Yeah.
But taking a scissors and doing it every 3 or 4 days, that's kind of a lot.
Well, they have these little machine things.
That's right. They have little machines. They sold them.
Run on batteries.
They run on batteries. And see, that's it, Tom. They run on batteries. Take Tom's advice and get one of those battery-powered machines.
$9
They're like $9.95.
$80.
As opposed to $80, always looking for the cheaper thing. But actually, that's the best solution. I remember when I was a kid, they would sell them, and they would advertise them in the back of comic books. I have no idea why. Comic books. And,
are you serious?
Yes, and matchbook cases. And everyone in my family smoked it. I remember I bought one when I was like 16 because I thought the hair in my nose was too long. At 16, I thought it was too long. I gave up that concept when I was older. But I wouldn't use the scissors either because using a long pointy scissors, you're more likely to jab yourself in your nose. Do not use electrolysis on the inside of the nose. Now, why it's growing in your nose and not on top of your head is one of nature's mysteries.
Yes.
That's right. It's one of nature's mystery, and I don't have the answer to that.
Have a myth for Zorba? I bet he knows the right answer. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Back to the phones we go. A listener with us now in Dallas, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And my question is in reference to drooling while I'm asleep. I've noticed that I've been drooling a lot during my sleep. And it's getting pretty irritating because my pillow's wet, when I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what could cause this or how to stop it.
Uh-huh. And some people drool more or situations. So first of all, are you on any medications at all?
Just a high cholesterol med.
So just a high cholesterol med. That's the only med that you're on. Because there's some medications that will dry the mouth out, and then sometimes the mouth then has a response of drooling to try to wet the mouth. What have you done? Have you done anything to try to decrease the drooling?
No, I haven't.
Uh-huh. I have some suggestions. If you'll notice, I have not answered the question of why you drool. And the reason is I don't have the foggiest idea, but it's not an uncommon thing. People on the whole do not talk about drooling. They don't sit around and say, hey, I drool at night on my pillow. Yeah. What do you do for that?
So strokes to the caller for bringing this up.
Right, right. So as I said, have you talked about this to anybody else?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
that's my girlfriend.
Yes, you mean because she notices it, you're drooling on the on the pillow. So one of the things, there are a couple of things you can do. First of all, the bedroom may not be moist enough. You live in Dallas, it can be dry. So one thing I would do is I look at an ultrasonic vaporizer in the bedroom. For some people that helps because the mouth is then not as dry. The second thing I would try would be lip balm. And I would put lip balm on your lips before you go to sleep because that may keep the moisture in your lips because the drooling may be a response to the dryness on the lips that's occurring at night. That may be another issue. And I would look at that. And then tell me about the toothpaste. What toothpaste do you use?
Just a Colgate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fluoride.
I would switch to Sensodyne. And the reason is there are a lot of things that happen with toothpaste. So if we look at Colgate and we look at Crest and we look at what's put in to make your teeth whiter and to reduce tartar and to reduce longevity and make your mouth, there are a tremendous number of things that are put, and fluoride, into toothpaste. And there are a lot of things that occur when we brush our teeth. We're putting these chemicals into our mouth to get our teeth white, and they work. But there are a lot of chemicals in there. Sensodyne is a good example of something that is simple. It's a very simple toothpaste. And I would switch to that because it might be that you're actually stimulating the salivary glands in your mouth from the chemicals that might be tartar-free and whitening when you're brushing your teeth. So I would also switch to Sensodyne. Use lip balm and Sensodyne. Those would be the first things I would do. And if that failed, I'd go to the vaporizer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And Tom is right. Thanks for sharing that. It's not, it's common, and yet it's not a common topic of conversation.
Right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks again for the call. We appreciate it. And before we head out, Zorba, we get all kinds of emails from listeners, and we love it, so keep them coming. Here's a helpful tip we received from a listener, Jane, who has a curious cure for cluster headaches. She writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, first, I love your show. Recently, someone called in and asked about treating frequent cluster headaches. Here's what I do to get rid of a cluster headache within 15 to 30 minutes. I brew very strong coffee and add crushed red pepper to it.
Ooh.
I make the coffee as strong as possible and as hot and spicy as I can tolerate. I drink it down quickly, and afterwards I may eat a cracker if the spice is too much for my mouth. I drink this cure, and within 15 minutes, my cluster headaches are gone and do not return. If you are not a fan of coffee or espresso, you can try other sources of high caffeine and combine it with hot, spicy food. It works."
It's a great concept. And I'll tell you where it may help. We know that some people with cluster headaches are helped by taking a Q-tip, putting it in the back of their nose with xylocaine, either viscous xylocaine or that. So when she is having the hot caffeinated drink that also has spice to it, she is probably doing the same thing in the back of her nose and numbing things. And we know that that can be the source of problem with cluster headaches. Now, cluster headaches are awful. They're awful, so that a lot of people who have cluster headaches who don't like coffee would probably tolerate hot, spicy hot, highly caffeinated coffee if it got rid of their headaches.
Yeah.
I used to get migraines for many, many years. They decreased over time. The migraines were terrible, and there is, you know, and certainly were comparable to cluster headaches. If I were to be able to get rid of my migraine that quickly with something that innocuous, I certainly would have tried it. And in fact, this might be a cure for some people for migraine headaches.
Whoa.
But for cluster headaches, it makes some sense because we know there's the nasal connection.
Yeah. Well, we take a lot of medicine we don't particularly like, so
that's right.
Coffee would be kind of the same
thing. Yeah, the same thing. Yeah. Exactly.
Have a hot tip for Zorba? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Or you can find us on Facebook.
You got it, Tom.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0131Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.